LibroFM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. Choose from more than 150,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With LibroFM, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know what one we're talking about, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community.
If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free LibroFM app.
If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from the people who know audiobooks best, local booksellers.
Listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get a 2-month audiobook membership for the price of 1 month.
Go to Libro.fm, that's LIBRO.FM, and enter bookstore at checkout. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I am Corinne. This week, our episode is dedicated to Lisa R. I say Lisa R because we have several other Lisas who are patrons. I should make a tier just for Lisas because you guys deserve it. Thank you, Lisa, for being a patron. If you are interested in our Patreon at all, you can check it out at patreon.com/thebookstore.
Yay.
All right. So this week, wow. What a time to be alive, as Josh and I like to say. It's been hard to come up with things to talk about. So we went back to an old favorite on the bookstore, except we maybe didn't do as much research as normal. So, yeah. But we are here to bring you a couple of literary scandals. Episode may be on the short side, but, you know. We're here to break down a couple of scandalous happenings in the book world. Do you want to start with yours or?
Sure. I'll start with mine. Mine's pretty short. It's actually not a short scandal, but I'm going to talk about it in a short way because it's just too involved to really talk about it. And I'm almost positive I have at least mentioned this on the podcast before. But I do not have the strength to go back and listen to every single episode ever.
That is the problem we've gotten to, and it's the problem with mine too. Like I have almost convinced myself now that I have done an entire segment on this, even though I've searched through our website and I can't find any mention of it. Really, I am kind of paranoid.
So. Yeah, it does make me think that I should have like put better descriptions in our mini episodes and things about what we've talked about. But anyway, too late for that now.
That has backfired before.
Yeah. So. Yes. Okay. So mine is about this writer named Jonah Lehrer. He was sort of like, what do I want to call it? What's the name? Not protege. What's it when you're like young and like really smart?
Right. A prodigy.
Yes. A prodigy. Not protege. Prodigy.
They sound similar. Yeah.
So he had 3 best-selling books by the time he was 31. And I think he wrote along the kind of lines of, I don't know if I would call it like, maybe like kind of pop psychology a little bit. Like he was kind of like, I'm going to use science to explain human behavior and creativity. Mm-hmm. I'm really like pulling this out of nowhere, but probably maybe like a Malcolm Gladwell type situation.
I think that's what he was going for. Yeah.
Yeah. He had neuroscience, but it was definitely more like approachable kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it all comes out of like the same sort of like Freakonomics.
Yes.
Which I mean, like Freakonomics, I think is slightly more, I don't know, slightly more reliable than Malcolm Gladwell. But yeah, it all comes out of that same sort of like, did you know that like the price of Wheaties corresponds with blah, blah, blah? And then like, what can we learn about that? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also like I'm definitely not interested in that type of book, so it's hard for me to read descriptions of his books and like understand what he's talking about because it's just like I cannot care less about this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But anyways, so His first scandal came up because it was discovered that he had reused material that he wrote in a Washington Post column in a New Yorker column. Like, he was now working for the New Yorker, and they found that. And then that, of course, led to a bunch of people being like, let's find all the other, if he's done this before.
Right.
And he did it like 13 times before. So that scandal, I think, is very interesting because he was self-plagiarizing. And it makes me think, I wonder if that's less accepted in nonfiction than in fiction, because I feel like there's so many examples of writers publishing short stories and then writing a novel, like taking that short story and expanding it into a novel. And that's not considered
right.
self-plagiarizing. There's no controversy at all about doing
that. Yeah, I think what was a recent episode we did about fact-checking in journalism, right? I think mm-hmm. maybe part of the problem comes from the fact that the Washington Post probably owned his work that he wrote for them, and then he used it in the New York Times. So that might be the difference. Like, when you write a short story, that short story is yours, but if you use that short story later to write a book, that's fine. But like, if you're writing a column for a journal or a newspaper or something like that, that copyright probably belongs to the publication and not to you.
Right.
So you can't reuse it somewhere else.
And yeah.
It probably, if he had said, like, this is research or writing I did for
yes.
previous stuff, it would have been okay. But because he didn't, it was not as above board.
Yeah, I think that exactly too. I think, you know, the New Yorker had an expectation that they were getting brand new information and articles from
right.
him. And so if you find out, actually, no, you're not, it's kind of like, what am I paying you for? Like, I'm paying you for new stuff
yeah.
and you're giving yeah. me the same stuff before. So he's kind of getting paid twice. Whereas with the short story novel situation, that's all like very, very clear. I'm mm-hmm, sure that's mm-hmm. included in authors' pitches. Like, I published this short story, now my novel is about it. And then that's how the agent like shops the book.
Right.
What I yeah. assume. So I think it's like definitely much different. And I didn't think about the copyright, but that's another interesting thing too. But regardless, you know, Lehrer like survived that mistake. He apologized, and the New Yorker was like, we're going to be more careful in the future about watching that he's not going to do this again. But then a bigger scandal and a much, much worse one was uncovered. So John Ronson writes about this in So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
Mm-hmm.
A reporter, Michael C. Moynihan, discovered that Lehrer made up quotes by Bob Dylan and put them in one of his books. And Lehrer's excuse was basically like, I'm a big Bob Dylan fan. I remembered he kind of said things like this, but I just never went back and looked up the exact quotes and wrote them in. And I feel like that's something we talk about when it's like you're getting the sort of fear of getting too far in over your head.
Yes.
Like, you realize you made a mistake, but you don't know how to go back and correct that mistake, and things
right.
keep going forward.
Yes. This also reminds me, because when I was looking up scandals, like, a lot of them happened in early 2019, which like truly feels like a lifetime ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Jill Abramson, who used to be like an editor of the New York Times, executive editor of the New York Times, she wrote a book last year called The Merchants of Truth. And it was discovered that there were like some pretty significant mistakes in it when the galley went out, and then those were supposed to be fixed and whatever. But then like, I think something came up where somebody was asking her, or it even maybe came out in the writing of her book. I don't know what it was exactly, but she basically said that like, she doesn't ever record conversations. She just relies on notes, which is like not really standard practice from journalists, apparently. I don't really know. I'm not a journalist, but like, apparently that set up red flags. And she basically is just like, it kind of comes down to like, well, you know, like, I recreate these conversations from like what I remember of it, which is like, definitely not how journalism works, right? But
yeah.
It reminds me of like his whole like, well, I had heard that Bob Dylan said a thing like this once, so then I just said that he said this. Just like, definitely
yeah.
not right. What are these people doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because that's the whole thing is, I don't know, was it intentional? Like, did he remember he put those in there and was just like, you know what, never mind. And also with the fact checking thing, clearly nobody went back and fact checked that right. Bob Dylan actually did say those things, because I feel like that would be a pretty easy thing to fact check, like finding out if the Giants played on a particular Sunday in 1950 or whatever would be hard. But being like, did Bob Dylan say this? I don't know. So I think that's interesting, too, when talking about like fact checking, because again, I don't know. I mean, I don't like Lehrer or what he did, but I kind of can see how it could happen when there's no system of checking his work.
Right.
And I think it's interesting because, to my recollection, Ronson kind of makes the point that Lehrer's public shaming was maybe a bit overdone and he didn't deserve how bad it was, which I think is true. I don't disagree with that. But I also want to note that Lehrer still got a book deal after that.
Yeah. Also, I guess to be fair, I don't know if to be fair is the right thing to say, but John Ronson's premise of his entire book was that public shaming is inappropriate, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, too, maybe you could even say like public shaming didn't work. Like it clearly doesn't work. So why are we doing it?
And I think Ronson has since come out to say things to that effect, too.
Right. And I think, and I like John Ronson a lot, and I loved So You've Been Publicly Shamed. I love that book. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also, when you look at the sort of scandals in that book compared to what we are faced with now, it's wildly different, and people, I think, keep trying to use that book.
Yes.
And Ronson has basically said, you know, no, do not use this for like actual Nazis, you know?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. I think that is kind of interesting, too, that like with all this controversy, Lehrer still got a book deal, and that, I guess, also had some problems with it. And then he went on to co-write another book with another author. And that one, I think that book ended up just having the other author referenced or on the back flap, you know, with the author's notes or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, it's just like fascinating that with all that people, you know, get up in arms about plagiarizing and all this kind of stuff, like it really doesn't matter if you're a certain type of person.
Yeah. I mean, like people lose college educations over plagiarism in like little essays, you know, essentially. Yeah. Like there are policies at universities across America that if you're caught plagiarizing, you will be thrown out of school. And I think like I've always been like a little scared of that because I'm like, what does that mean exactly? Is that like if I fail to like properly cite something or whatever, like what is that going to mean? But yeah, it's really interesting that some people can get away with it and then still have like, I assume like a career that makes it probably very comfortable to live in New York City, because I'm going to assume that's where Jonah Lehrer lives.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I'm not mad that Lehrer still is getting book deals. Like he has every right to make money. I don't want him to be like destitute or anything like that.
Right.
It's just so strange how so many things when you're in school and when you're in university that it's like, if you do this, your life is ruined. But then there's examples of it happening all over the place. Yeah.
You know, it'd be really easy to read into the white manness of it all, but we'll let that go aside from that.
Yeah.
Saying that. Well, you've chosen a plagiarism story. I also have chosen a plagiarism story. I know for a fact that somebody brought this to my attention back when it happened, or at least I'm pretty sure they did, or I'm going insane. So if you're out there and you're like, hey, Corinne, like, I definitely sent you this link. You did. Let me know. I'll get you proper credit. I just can't find where that link was sent to me. I thought it was on Patreon, but maybe I'm losing my mind. I don't totally know. Anyway, that is part of why I feel like maybe I've talked about this before and I'm slightly paranoid, but I'm going to repeat it to you, I guess, just in case. And that will kind of be like you're one of my friends in real life, because I just tell the same stories over and over and over again. So we'll just pretend. Okay, so the time is February 2019. Like I said, an entire lifetime ago. Christiane Soraya is a USA Today bestselling author. This is kind of a feat because she lives in Brazil and she's writing and selling books internationally. I think mostly through Amazon, so like self-publishing, but of course they're romance novels, so that's like an enormous market, very lucrative. You can get tons and tons of fans. That way, millions of people read romance novels that are published, self-published online through Amazon, etc. She also, according to her website, has a degree in business law in which she had practiced for over 20 years before becoming a best-selling author. So, sometime around February of 2019, romance novelist Courtney Milan was alerted by a fan to a blog post that contained passages from a romance novel by Soraya titled Royal Love. And parts of these passages, and by parts I mean entire paragraphs worth of these passages, appeared to be lifted whole cloth from Milan's novel The Duchess War. Milan, aside from being a very successful romance novelist, is also a lawyer, and she was a former professor of intellectual property. So she tweeted out that she wasn't entirely sure what to do with the information that her work had apparently been plagiarized, but that she would be seeking legal counsel on the situation. Then things get kind of goofy because it is Twitter and it's like romance Twitter, which like we have talked about several times on the podcast. People get very into, and like I said, there's like millions of romance fans. So like you're essentially never going to be able to pull over anything on these people because they are legion.
Yes.
So as things tend to in these sorts of situations, it got really big. So shortly after Milan posted her tweet, the hashtag copy paste Chris took off. And authors and fans started finding entire sections of novels that had been lifted and put into Soraya's work, including Tessa Dare, who we read for the podcast back in like February 2018, I think. And then Lynn Graham, Bella Andre, and Nora Roberts. So,
wow.
This is Nora Roberts.
I mean, it's very daring to plagiarize probably one of the biggest romance writers.
I should say that this isn't just in Soraya's books. This is in one book.
Wow.
Yes. So Nora Roberts in April of 2019 would end up suing Soraya for the plagiarism. And I think it was for like $25,000. So not a ton of money, but I think like enough to be like, you fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, that makes me wonder if like, because Roberts doesn't need the money. So I wonder if she was just kind of did it on behalf of probably smaller romance writers as well. Because from what I've seen, and we've talked about Roberts on the podcast before, she seems pretty cool. And very supportive of younger and newer writers. So I don't know. I guess I could see her doing it just to like make a statement and be like, hey, can you watch yourself?
Right. Okay. So this is an example that was published in Nora Roberts' novel, The Liar, from 2015. And the quote is, "She was beautiful. A man didn't get to be just shy of his 30th birthday without seeing some beautiful women, even if it was just on a movie screen. But this one, in the flesh, was one quick wow." And the passage in A Royal Affair by Soraya, which was published in 2018, is, "She was beautiful, period. A man didn't..."
Wait. Oh,
sorry. No, sorry. Yeah.
I thought the plagiarism was just that she said she was beautiful. I was like, okay, hold on. Let me take everything back.
No. I thought that she had just thrown in some different like punctuation, but she hadn't. That is the same. She was beautiful, period, from both of them.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then it goes on. Mm-hmm. But anyway, sorry. The quote from Soraya's book is, "She was beautiful. A man didn't get to be just shy of his 37th birthday without seeing some beautiful women, even if it was just on a movie screen. But that was not the case with Ludwig, who had more than his share of extraordinarily beautiful women, but this woman in the flesh was superlative."
I mean, the thing that's really interesting it's pretty plain language, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To the point. But at the same time, so it almost, like, I almost want to say, well, maybe that could happen accidentally. But right. It is hard to say that because it is so exact.
I mean, you're going to change your mind in a couple minutes. So,
okay.
So okay. Don't worry. So after Christine Milian, or sorry, not Christine, after Courtney Milian had tweeted out about this, about Soraya, shortly after that, Christiane Soraya tweeted, "Good morning at Courtney Milian. I just woke up to this and I am astonished. I would have never, ever done this. I am in this writing for a few years now, and I am also a lawyer. Could we perhaps talk?" And then, you know, some more like Twitter stuff went down. Things happened. Soraya deletes her account entirely. But that was not deleted before she tweeted out something that was screenshotted by Twitter user Golden Eye Angel, who then shared it with Milan, Tessa Dare, and the Romance Writers Association of America, which, whew,
yikes.
Yeah, things would continue to happen with them eventually. So she tweeted, this is Soraya who tweeted, "I just woke up to the distressing news that my work has plagiarism from other authors. I am taking down all of the works I did with a ghostwriter on Fiverr, who, by the way, has closed the account until I have made certain this is solved."
Oh, wow. Wait. So she hired a ghost writer to write
yes.
her? Oh, no.
Yes. On Fiverr, which, like, I've never used Fiverr before, but I had, like, the idea that it was, like, you can go get, like, a fairly cheap, quickly done, like, logo done by somebody, you know, like, it's kind of like it's kind of like an eBay for like creative freelancing bids, right?
Yeah, I feel, I mean, and I have no basis for this, but to me, I feel like there's no way it's not like exploitative.
Yeah, no, I think that's it's I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Because it's yeah. it is, I think it's set up so that like people can bid on your job. And so like essentially you're getting desperate, like, you know, graphic designers and stuff like that who just need work, and they're making you stuff that would, if you went, you know, and hired somebody, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, like it would cost you like a decent amount of money because it's supposed to, right? But like these yeah. people are either getting undercut by who knows who from who knows where, or they're having to take low bids in order to get any work at all. So yeah, it is it, like the whole system I think is shady, but like the fact that somebody used this to write novels is like mind-blowing to me. But that's where I got into reading from a few different blogs online. This one is from Kilby Blades. She is or they are a romance novelist, and also like they do copywriting and like copy editing and stuff. And they wrote about this on their blog, which is essentially the fact that like, and this sort of comes up in like other things we've talked about when we've talked about like scandals regarding like romance publishing specifically and like self-publishing online, which is that people, in order to get like really big and famous, because you can, but you kind of have to like create this huge empire for yourself, and you have to do it quickly because Amazon favors, like the algorithm favors authors who produce a lot of work and mm-hmm. like consistently, and that gets really big. So this person, Kilby Blades, talks about how they work on different freelancing websites to get their copy editing work and their editing work. And they will get like a lot of requests from people who want her or this person, Kilby, to write their romance novels for them, like ghostwrite them. Wow. And so I think it's like a huge thing in like the self-published romance world, where probably a lot of these books are being ghostwritten because they kind of have to be. So like authors are using it to create huge names for themselves, and they're also using it to get like a lot of work done. And so essentially what happens, or happened in the case of Soraya, is this Fiverr ghostwriter that she picked up just kind of stuffed a book together with works by other people.
That's crazy. And it's also crazy that clearly, or she didn't even try to do her due diligence and like make sure that the book was free of any plagiarizing. She was just like, I'm just gonna slap it on here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's I think what's interesting, and I think this was pointed out in one of the articles that I read about this, so I will also be posting in the show notes like the credit where I've got some of these sources from and that sort of thing.
I will too.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that a lot of scandals like within book publishing tend to point to inherent problems within the framework of publishing entirely, right? So like romance, like I've been saying this whole time, is an enormous market, and there's like an insatiable base of many, many readers. And the problem is that like they have so many diverse likes and interests that don't get published like within the realm of like traditional publishing. So then that's where like these markets on Amazon and stuff have come for like self-published things. But because it's also just like, so I don't want to call it like greedy makes it sound mean, but like they want a lot and they'll read a ton, right? And so like that's where this kind of like creates its own mess for this sort of thing to happen. But I've got a couple like extra tweets here. Tessa Dare had tweeted, I am literally 9% into one book by Christian Soraya, Royal Love, and have found text plagiarized from at least 5 different authors.
Wow.
Courtney Milan said that Soraya admitted to her in an email that Royal Love was entered in the Rita Award. And she says, and I feel pretty weird about that as I wasn't allowed to enter The Duchess War when it wasn't published. When it was published. I don't know why she wasn't able to do that. But yeah, it's really kind of crazy, I think. And it kind of shows like the fact that I don't know. I think if romance was taken more seriously, like within the realm of like mainstream publishing, if there were more avenues, like stuff like this wouldn't necessarily be as big of a problem as it tends to be.
Yeah. It's interesting too with romance and with all like sort of genre fiction too, is tropes are really important, and like you can totally follow the exact same trope as another book and that's not bad at all. And I think that makes it a little bit murkier too, you know, like if you have the exact same plot as another book, like is that plagiarizing?
Right.
And I know that's not the case in this situation it's like literal sentences, but
paragraphs.
I think it makes it like just kind of murky and weird situation. And then of course like Amazon is unfortunately the best avenue for romance self-published authors, but it's also terrible because what the algorithm favors, and so it's like encouraging this mass output of stuff.
Amazon's also not there to protect the creators at all. They don't care as long as there's like enough people to come back in and fill the gap, right? You know, like, so that doesn't matter. There's nothing there to protect you from somebody plagiarizing your work. And there's nothing to protect you as a consumer from getting something that's plagiarized or ripped off from somebody else either. In a quote, I think that was given to Nora Roberts's like legal counsel from Soraya. Soraya had said that she says, I was fooled by some quote mentors and quote coachers who taught me that more, fast, she wrote, and blamed ghostwriters she had hired on the freelance marketplace for the overlap between her books and others. And I think, like, I believe that's probably true, right? Like, I assume that is it. She thought that this was, like, what was going to be best for her career, to make it in this, like, incredibly saturated market in order to get big and take off. But, like, it is very dishonest. I don't know. Ghostwriting is always fascinating to me anyway. But, like, to think about the fact that, like, a lot of self-published books could also be ghostwritten is interesting to me, because then it basically just becomes like a huge scam where like who knows if the name that's on your book is who is writing it or whatever.
Here's my hot take. Ghostwriting should be illegal. I don't know. I just, that's never going to happen. So it's totally fine for me to have this opinion. But like,
yeah.
James Patterson doesn't write his novels anymore.
Right.
Obviously, V.C. Andrews is not writing her novels, you know?
Yeah.
Any celebrity book that comes out is absolutely ghostwritten. And it's just like,
with the exception, apparently, of Tyra Banks' Model Land, which we will be reading for our next discussion episode.
And honestly, I read, this is weird, but I read Darren McCarty, who played for the Red Wings, his autobiography, and it was ghostwritten, and he like admitted, like, this is my co-author, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I cannot believe this is even ghostwritten, because this is written so terribly. I would 100% believe McCarty wrote this himself without the help of anybody else. But
hey, you know what? I think that means that the ghostwriter did a really good job of impersonating his voice. So
but I don't know. It just seems kind of like a weird situation. Like, the average consumer, the average reader is not going to know that it's being ghostwritten. Only if you're like sort of in the industry are you going to understand that a lot of these huge authors are not writing their own books. So it just kind of like, I don't know, it kind of stinks. And I don't like it for the ghostwriters either. If they could get their name on the cover, then yes, but they don't.
Right. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's so bizarre. I don't even know exactly what to say about it. It's just like, it just keeps making me, I don't know, like, like you said, it bums me out for the ghostwriters, because they're not getting the money that they deserve for the work, especially not through like a service like Fiverr or whatever, where like, or even the Kilby Blades blog, where Kilby says that, you know, like, they get requests for like to write basically an entire novel in 3 to 4 weeks. And like, the pay is like $600 to $3,000, $600 to $3,000. It's that, like, that's outrageous.
Yeah.
Why would you do that for somebody else when you could just write your own novel and try to sell it? I don't know. Like, it's very weird. But yeah, like most things, it's like this kind of like strange, shady, like back alley version of like what you thought you knew. And I don't know. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I don't know. Well, should we wrap up?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
If you want to support The Bookstore beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore, or you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And you can find all the ways to contact us, email, social media, phone line at thebookstorepodcast.com. And also, you can follow us or friend us on Goodreads. We love to see what people are reading, even though I just constantly add more books to my TBR, which is never going to go down, but I'm okay with it.
I keep trying to write reviews too, and I am miserably behind on that. Our next book discussion is going to be Model Land by Tyra Banks. You can't find it at your local bookstore, probably, because it is, like, definitely out of print. Your library may have it. You can check it out and read along with us, or you can just listen to us ask many, many questions about what it is.
And also, as you said, not ghostwritten Model
not
Land
ghostwritten
by Tyra Banks.
Yes.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye. Bye. I don't know if "to be fair" is the right thing to say.
To be fair.
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 I guess to be fair.